What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Chain Reaction Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremiah Mitchell, joined here in this new year, 2018, by Mr. Jeremiah Harding. How are you doing, sir? Good to see your face.
I'm doing pretty well. I got over all my hangovers like a day ago, so...
All your hangovers?
Yeah, I've had like maybe 5 hangovers very recently, so...
That does not sound like an enjoyable experience.
It was before the hangover.
All right. Worth it?
Every one of them but one, where I was basically like, I don't remember anything. So, like, anything could have happened. But, like, I have friends that I've known for a long enough time that I can trust when they say that I basically lied down and just moved my hand weirdly for an hour.
Yeah. I feel like that's mostly what happens when people get blackout drunk. Nothing interesting. It's like, I don't even remember what happened last night. Well, you didn't do anything. You literally just laid around because you had no idea what was going on. Yeah, it's never actually like the movie The Hangover where, yeah, we got blackout drunk, don't remember what happened the night before, but we did all these crazy things. It's more just,
yeah,
I was puking. So that's fun.
But like the Hangover movies, at least they have an excuse where they were like crossed on multiple things. Like me, all I had was like way too much booze.
Right, that's true. So how was your New Year's, Christmas, all that shit? We didn't record for, I think it's been like 2.5 weeks, in case you're listening to this in the far future.
Well, it was good. I got a lot of work done getting my my vlog together. So I saw family and like longtime friends and like but a lot of it was just spent being very productive, which sounds odd given the report I just gave about my 5 recent hangovers. But
well, it was only 5 over a multiple week period, so
yeah, that's not
a lot
bad,
of days to
right?
be productive. I don't know. That would be an abnormal life experience for me, but yeah, it gives you a lot of days to be productive still.
Yeah. Well, so, but
you know,
but
like, I feel like you're a little behind the times with the vlog. You know, if you want to stay ahead of the curve, you need like a vlog, a virtual reality log. You know, I mean, that's the next thing, right? Why are you just thinking?
The connection just cut out.
Oh, that's too bad. I said a virtual reality log.
Yeah, well, that might be a thing at some point, but I'd have to do the 360 video thing, and I don't really have the camera equipment for that.
Oh, that's something to invest in. I like talking about investments when you're really just buying shit for you to do stuff.
Right.
People talk about, yeah, it was a good investment. Oh, really? What do you think the profit margin is going to be on that? Well, -$600. Okay.
And do you think the market corrections are going to allow for any sort of changes in that, or are you going to, are you just going to hold all of it, or like sell all at once?
Yeah, exactly. When they're talking about a new sweater or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's good. Glad your holidays were productive. Mine were not, but they were busy. We had family. My mom and her sister stayed over for a week, which is kind of an event in itself. We've had a lot of people staying at our house lately, which is different for us. Normally, we're just not alone, but, you know, just here.
Well, you recently
not used to having
worked
other people
on your
in the
house, right?
I'm always working on a house. This house is over 100 years old, the one I'm in right now. And it was, just to give you an idea, I purchased it for $30,000, so it needed a lot of work invested in, and I've torn out almost all of it to the studs and floorboards and redone all the wiring and stuff. So what I've been doing right now is I almost have one of our bathrooms completely remodeled, but I didn't really get a chance to work on that very much over the last couple of weeks because holidays.
Well, but at least you're working on it. A lot of people they say like they hate this house and then they move away and it's a terrible house that somebody then works on and then it's fine.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of the plan. I have a very low risk tolerance, so I don't buy things that are really expensive. It's nice when you buy something that's very cheap, you put a little bit of labor into it, a little bit of money, and you know it's probably never going to be worth less than what it was, you know, when I purchased it.
Because, like, all these people talking about investments, I think that they probably don't know how to fix anything.
Yeah, that's true. But there is something to be said. You can make a lot of money just investing wisely and getting people to do the work for you. You know, you don't necessarily need to be able to do it yourself. There's something, division of labor can be very efficient. But it's
house flipping can also, like house flipping and also, like, use resources better than a lot of other sorts of, like, renovation projects. Like, if you can get into the house flipping market and you don't mind moving around and basically living in dust, then it's not that bad a thing. Like, you could live in a trailer outside and make, like, $30,000 a year and have a house to also live in. So, I mean, it's not that bad.
Yeah, if you could do that. If I was single, I think I would do a lot more of that. But
right
now, I'm not. If we
or
if
when
we
your
move,
kid is, like, much older, you could, like, give your kid a job helping you flip.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, if he's much older, it'd be interesting. If he's, like, you know, 18 or something like that.
I was thinking like 15 or 16. Like,
I was thinking
his,
like,
first job be that.
I was thinking have him live in a house. 15, 16. Yeah, I'm hoping when he's like 6, he'll be interested in helping me paint. That's kind of what I'm banking. I'm not banking on that, but it'd be really nice. He's super interested in when I do stuff. I have a 14-month-old, and he is like gets obsessed when I let him touch a tool. He gets very excited about that, showing him how a tape measure works, and he loves just watching me put mud on walls and all that sort of stuff. So I'm hoping that without putting him in a place where education becomes droll and where your curiosity is sort of stamped out and gotten rid of by merely making you memorize the things other people want you to learn, I'm hoping that by avoiding that, he will remain curious for the rest of his life and actually enjoy things like work. It's weird. It's weird watching him now where you watch my kid, you know, grab a broom and start sweeping the floor. And it's like, so what, at what point in a child's life does this become a chore? You know, as we tend to think about, at what point does this become like something that seems really negative instead of something that they enjoy doing? And how natural and how is that process and how conditioned is that process? It's just kind of, you know, I think about all sorts of things like that now watching my kid all the time.
You know, it could be because so many people are so wrapped up in whatever they consider entertainment and so adverse to the job aspect of life because their job sucks that, you know, maybe any sort of additional work is just a part of the same suck, even if it's much easier, even if it's something that improves their life on a very specific and direct level. Maybe it's something that, like, contributes to that and detracts from the entertainment thing. And in this, like, 24/7 entertainment environment, maybe people are just so obsessed with getting that next hit of dopamine that if they don't, they get cranky. Like an addict who's not hooking up at that particular moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of different complex reasons behind it. I'm just kind of, yeah, it'll be interesting. It's a very, I don't know if it's an educational process, but I'm just so intrigued watching this person become more of a person and learn about the world around him and see what his desires and motives are right now, and just wondering how will those change, and am I going to be able to figure out why those changed, and you know, what are the factors that led to it, or is it just sort of an all internal process of development? I don't know. I don't even know how we got on that. Ah, flipping houses and shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you got to.
That was my last couple.
You got to put your kid to work is the real truth. Like, you've got to instate some child labor and then pay him like minimum wage so that he has some money saved up for when he moves out of the house. And then you've got, you know, a worker, a house, something you flipped, you know, probably multiple house flipped projects, and you've got enough money to retire on. Makes sense to me.
Yeah. If he's interested in it, I'd love to put him to work and pay him to do it. Me, you know, I don't know. It all depends upon what happens with the market in the next 18 years. But it'd be really nice to be able to put him in a house, you know, and just be like, hey, this is yours. You know, improve it or sell it. Do what you want with it when he gets out, as opposed to paying for his college. I'd rather just right. give him a house. Be like, here, you can sell this and pay for college if you're interested. You might find this
or you can rent out rooms and pay for college that way.
Like, yep.
There's always options.
Yeah. Well, a lot of shit's happened. It always happens in, you know, politics and whatnot. Anything you want to talk about today, Mr. Harding, that's more related to the content of this show?
Well,
lots of bullshit today. 12 minutes of it.
I dislike the fucking bullshit over, like, people claiming that there's going to be a nuclear war. That is such trash. There's no possible way. Well, okay, so, first off, the elites know about mutually assured destruction, and they know about radiation. The reason that they haven't done it yet, even though it could have made things a lot easier for them if that was what they were planning, is because they don't want nuclear war. They want a tax farm of people working for them, and they want enough of them that they can steal a tiny enough amount from each one of them that people like don't rise up and say that you're taking too much. So they need a certain amount of people on the planet to make their elitist plans work, and they're not going to let a nuclear war happen. That's just fucking absurd. But beyond that, there's like the fact that it destroys the land, it irradiates it, it means that it'd be harder to grow the food that the elites eat. And I don't think that they're willing to live off of Soylent Green forevermore because they pushed a few buttons too many. I don't think that that's the plan, and I think that the people who think that that is the plan are fucking stupid.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go that far about those people, but I tend to agree. I mean, I think nuclear war is possible, but it would be more of a mistake and an aberration rather than being a part of a plan. I'm more scared, and it's funny. Like I do actually think it's largely because of the people at the very top and the people above those at the very top that they have no interest in having the entire world destroyed, because what is there left for them? Nothing. Like their well-being depends upon being parasitical upon others, and that's true in all sorts of ways, not just the money they receive, but also the way they're able to use that money to get what they want from other people. The thing that scares me more is not nuclear weapons, because, you know, it sounds so crazy to me 5 years ago before realizing what the state is, but there is a lot of evidence, as you well know and can point to better than I can, that there are groups of people, many of them among the super rich, who want a significant decrease in the planet's population. And the thing that scares me most then is not nuclear war, but it's like the different sort of new weapons that they're having now, which don't irradiate the soil and don't cause, you know, radiation to spill over all sorts of areas and be in an unpredictable patterns with the wind and stuff. It's stuff like, you know, it was 6 months ago now, where Trump dropped the mother of all bombs and things like that, which can create great amounts of destruction, or things like the Rod from God, I think it's called, where it's they have a satellite system, a satellite shoots like a giant metal rod, tungsten, I think, down at the Earth, and it causes about as much damage as a nuclear bomb because of the rate of speed and whatnot. Things like that, I am more disconcerted by, because you'll be able to kill a lot more people in case of, you know, starting some sort of stupid-ass war.
Or how about this? How about a brand new biological contaminant released over a major city center or 17? And how about this biological contaminant? The FDA is trying very hard to fight it, but we just can't figure out what this strain of whatever this is, and it's killing so many people. And then, like, we find out, like, a decade later, the CIA released it into the fog over these cities on purpose because the elites wanted to reduce the population. And what better place to do that than releasing a biological contaminant into a population center? It's like, it's really obvious that that'd be much closer to what would happen.
Maybe. It just depends upon what they have a better pretense for.
Well, right. Yeah, but like, if you can they don't really want to destroy the buildings, though.
If you can start a war with, I don't think they care about that. Like, you can still have a bunch of, still have a pretty good tax farm with if at least a few major city centers intact. You can still kill a lot of people. You know, you don't need as many buildings if you kill a billion people. And I don't think that is what is likely going to happen, but it certainly seems like the evidence is some people wish something like that would happen. And they're people with a lot of power.
Yeah. And, like, I'm going to send you something in the Twitter chat. I'm going to send you something about them releasing biological contaminants into the fog already.
Okay.
Because, like, this is something that they've been practicing for. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like almost daft to think about that. Like, to think about, like, oh yeah, they're going to set off nukes, which will destroy and irradiate a shit ton of the land. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, it does seem unlikely because it's so obviously self-destructive, and it's difficult to imagine that working out, you know, like that actually benefiting the people who are in charge of the nukes.
Yeah. I can't find the thing.
Okay, that's fine.
Wait. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Never mind. I just found it.
All right. I will not mind. Ever.
So, yeah. So, and I'm sending this so that it can be like included in the description for this. Let me read the first couple paragraphs here.
All right.
This is for Kevin Loria, Business Insider. One of the largest human experiments in history was conducted on unsuspecting residents of San Francisco. So, I mean, you already pretty much know what you're getting with an article like this, and Business Insider is no stranger to talking about conspiracies. Let me move this, because, like, Business Insider blocks ad blockers, so I have to steal the article with archive.is.
Inconvenient.
San Francisco's fog is famous, especially in the summer, when weather conditions combine to create the characteristic cooling blanket that sits over the Bay Area. But one fact many may not know about San Francisco's fog is that in 1950, the U.S. military conducted a test to see whether it could be used to help spread a biological weapon in a simulated germ warfare attack. This was just the start of many such tests around the country that will go on in secret for years. The test was a success, as Rebecca Creston explains over Discover Magazine, and one of the largest human experiments in history. But, as she writes, it was also one of the largest offensives of the Nuremberg Code since its inception. The code stipulates that voluntary informed consent is required for research participants, and that experiments that might lead to death or disabling injury are unacceptable. Nuremberg Code is, like, of course, the code that was written after Nazi Germany saw its defeat.
Yes.
The unsuspecting residents of San Francisco certainly could not consent to the military's germ warfare test, and there's good evidence that it could have caused the death of at least one resident of the city, Edward Nevin, and hospitalized 10 others. This is a crazy story, one that seems like it must be a conspiracy theory. I love how they say that, like, it must be a conspiracy theory, as though that's automatically wrong.
Right, it absolutely, you know, like, that's exactly what it is. It is a conspiracy theory, and the theory happens to be correct.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so anybody interested, they can click the link in the description, but they have better viruses now. If they wanted to do this, they could do it so much more fucking easily. And especially in a, like, less health-conscious city like fucking San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, they could definitely do that stuff very easily. I think there are forces in, or there are people that would be very opposed to doing that kind of thing. There was one recently, I can't remember what city it was in, but they were doing another test like that where they had an airborne... some sort of inert airborne particle they were spreading in a city or about to, and the people were complaining that it was going to happen. I think it was a small town. I wish I remembered more details about it so I could actually look it up, but I know residents were like, please don't do this. It's funny. In blatant violation of the Nuremberg Code, as if governments care. They just care what they can get away with.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. government worked closely with the Nazis until Hitler basically didn't do exactly the kind of bullshit that they wanted them to do.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Oh, the state is so stupid, and it's increasingly ridiculous that there are so many people that... will defend it to the death, literally. But so many people who will just defend it so irrationally, so constantly, without thinking, just desperate, hopeless sheep. That's what it feels like.
Well, of course. And it doesn't help that so many people have personal interest in the state, and they're not willing to, you know, like Nine Inch Nails said, bite the hand that feeds. You know, it's people have so many hooks into the state, and the state likes that. The state loves the fact that basically we're cows on its farm, and like whenever one goes off to be butchered, all the other cows say, you know, well, without them, who would feed us? And, you know, take care of our pastures and shit like that. If we even, are the lucky ones lucky enough to have pastures and shit like that. The analogy is really apt.
Yeah, yeah. Using that metaphor, like, people aren't willing to bite the hand that feeds. But because that hand feeds them, they're also, they put up mental blinders that prevents them from seeing that the hand that feeds them is the hand that slaughters them. The hand that feeds is also the hand which destroys and keeps them in cages. That's the hand that beats them when they dare go outside the fence.
Yeah. You know, and that's like, I posted this thing on Twitter, and it's gone pseudo, like, it's been posted in multiple places by people I know, but it's fucking when statists don't realize they're Sith, and it's this person saying sometimes force is necessary when people don't want to cooperate, and I said, I'm Darth Vader and I approve this message. Like, people just do not understand that what they're advocating is the same thing that they would probably oppose if their opponents were the ones doing it.
Yes. Yeah. It's that's an interesting metaphor. Yeah. Statists are the Sith. For sure.
Definitely.
The Sith actually have, like, thinking back, you know, some interesting justifications for wanting to create a giant empire, keep things, you know, under control, keep things working well in the populace.
Well, you know, I mean, and there's the other part of it. Like, that's, I don't like using Star Wars, but that was just too fucking easy. Mostly I use fucking Sonic because, like, the fucking
You do love
philosophy of
Sonic.
that is actually a little bit, like, more complex than most other things. But I won't go into that. But,
All right.
like, the essential idea of Star Wars that I don't like is the binary of, like, this is good, this is evil, because basically it seems like they were forcing their particular narrow view of what good and evil are, and then saying that, you know, you should be on the side of good. So I don't like that. You know, it's the same binary storytelling of all these other, like, terribly really limited myths, right? But you know,
Yeah,
it was really
childish.
easy here. Like, well, because I mean, anger leads to hate. Hate leads to anger. Anger leads to fear. Fear leads to the dark side. I think that's the quote.
Yeah,
I
something like
well,
that. Kind of Buddhist nonsense. That's
yeah,
what it
but it's
reminds me of.
also bullshit because, like, you know, anger can lead to hate, which doesn't necessarily lead to fear. What it leads to is action on a very extreme level that isn't necessarily at harmony with the earth, but might create harmony later if it's used properly. People shouldn't avoid being angry. They should use their anger better and be angry at the right things. They shouldn't not be angry. They shouldn't try to be Zen-like. I mean, maybe they
And
shouldn't be as angry as I am, but.
make anger your servant,
Yeah.
not your master, because it's really easy to let it
Right.
get out of control. But there are a lot of things where it's completely a natural and healthy and good, more ethically good response to be angry. And it's not a matter of being anger isn't a matter of being a discordant, as opposed to harmonious. You're talking about being harmonious with the earth. Being angry is a response, when an emotional response, when you recognize that the harmony has been disrupted. When you
Right.
that the way things should be has been shifted by evil actions.
Right. And you know, I mean, I'm not anymore, but when I was Christian, it really fucking pissed me off when Star Wars would be used as a like a realistic anchor for philosophy because God got angry. God hated things. So what were they saying? That somehow these force users were better than God? Like, they were really essentially putting down any religion that wasn't like directly trying to achieve some sort of bullshit Zen. And they were doing it in this very Hollywood-friendly way of binary good, evil, blue, red fucking bullshit. And I
Well,
hated that so
in
much.
relation to Christianity, it's kind of interesting the way the Star Wars puts things, because if I remember right, in like the prequel movies, the first three, episode 1, 2, and 3, they were didn't not want Anakin to fall in love, because he might get, if he loved, then he might get angry, and then he might turn to hate, and then he might turn to the dark side. So that is like perfect, not perfectly fitting, but it makes sense, in the Christian context, where, yeah, of course, hate and anger are possible human emotions and human responses, because humans were made to love. And if you love something and something bad happens to that thing, or someone does something deliberately evil to that thing, then of course you'll feel anger and hate. It's
Love
only
is
if you
passion. If
avoid
you don't.
that you can avoid the anger, if you avoid love.
Right. Love is passion. If you don't fiercely defend something, you don't fucking love it.
Right? Yeah, agreed. Let's transition the conversation, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's
I don't
fine.
even know where we're going with stuff, but someone asked an interesting question. I think there's a different possible answers, but the question was, what if someone, essentially, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly, but if someone purchases land that is quote unquote owned by the government, do they own that land? How do we deal with property rights when it comes to land that is purchased from the state? Harding,
Well,
any initial thoughts on that?
So like my first three thoughts are the government doesn't own shit.
Yes.
The second response would be, we should find out who the government stole it from originally. And if we can't, then it shouldn't be sold. It should be given. But if it is sold, then the government making like reclaiming Federal Reserve notes, you know, in exchange for somebody getting land when they would otherwise not have any, or land that they could use better than the government was using it. And that land can't be traced back to somebody who it can be returned to, like the victims of theft. You know, I don't see a problem with it. I mean, I could see definitely, like, it would be problematic if the land was owned and then the government eminent domained it, and then a corporation bought that directly, and, you know, the person that it was owned by, that homesteaded it, didn't get their property back, then it would be that person's property and the corporation would be complicit in the theft no matter what sales took place. But if no owner can be traced back, then I don't see a problem with it. I see zero problem with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think in most cases, not there are many, many exceptions. So don't email me or, you know, tell me an example of exceptions, because I can think of them. But in most cases, their government land, I'm just using that as a convenient shorthand, government land can't be traced back to its original owner. You know, in terms of its vast tracts of land it claims to own in the West, especially of the U.S. There's obviously, you know, a lot of examples of homes and businesses and stuff like that that eminent domain, you know, has taken over. But yeah, a lot of that area was functionally unowned. You know, and then yeah, the government just claimed ownership over it, as if that is adequate to actually own something, just saying, I own
mine,
yeah. Especially when you're an organization that is essentially a criminal gang that exists through theft, you can't be said to rightfully own anything until you restore all of your victims. In which case, if the government restored all of its victims ever, it would go bankrupt.
Yeah, well,
so it's a logical impossibility.
And beyond that, you know, you want to talk about that, look up corridor systems, because the reason government likes to own so much land is because the government gets to then decide how the roads are laid out in where civilians are allowed to live, and then say that they aren't allowed to live in all of these other areas, which basically means that they can tightly control in very small population clusters the average American people, and they can then build all their bases, and extreme wilderness areas can be like bunker situations and like fucking like vast arrays for their data centers, for, you know, solar fields, for anything they want. And then they can control the populations in small areas while having these big ass areas to find out how best to control populations, including secret bases where they conduct human experiments, you know, shit like, you know, fucking where they test biological contaminants. And that's one of the reasons that the U.S. government specifically loves being in the Middle East so much, because the Middle East is full of really blank areas where they can test a bunch of this shit. And also, they can then test it on people that the average person with a computer doesn't give a shit about. And if they do, it's only for a very brief period while they get that tear jerked from an Amnesty International video and hit that donate button with that dollar sign for one time in their entire life and think that they've done their part. So, like, the U.S. government loves to test and have a bunch of land that it doesn't really use so that it can control people on the land that they do use.
Yeah, and in places where the population is most dense, you tend to see a greater trust of government than in places where it's less dense.
Yeah.
There are a number of factors I could speculate about as to why that is the case, but I don't really want to get into that right now. Dealing with the original question just a little bit more, I think it government's a thief, so it doesn't rightfully own any land. So if someone moves onto land that the government claims to own, let's say it was previously unowned for the sake of ease. If someone moves onto land that the government claims to own and builds a house or a business or fences it. Yeah. Well, and he actually was there before the government, or they trace back their ranch and their grazing rights to before the government even claimed to own the land, I believe.
But and they were actually fucking using it, and the BLM goddamn wasn't.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. That stuff's crazy. I just read today that they're looking to get the lawyer who defended Bundy's, get him disbarred. Which is very, very disappointing. It's a lawyer fought to get his defendant off of charges and now might be facing disbarment. We'll see if that happens. I doubt it actually will, but
but I'm a dirty cynic, so I mean, I don't really get disappointed. I just get like acceptant.
Yeah, I don't want to get used to things. I want them always to be like, that sucks. Back to what I was, if someone moves on a land that government claims to own and build something, they are the rightful owners of that land.
Right, they homesteaded that shit.
Yeah, so whether or not they pay the government for it or don't pay them for it, they still become the rightful owners of the land. Now,
and if they pay the government for it, that's essentially, in that ethical framework, tantamount to paying a ransom. Because then you can live on land that you would have homesteaded anyway. You know, you just have to give up, like, years or possibly years of your life, because you're paying the government years of your life salary so that you can live on land that they weren't using and use it in ways that are better than they would have used them. So, you know, I see zero ethical concern here.
Yeah. The only thing is, and where things get very complex, I think, is if you buy land from the government that they stole from others. That becomes a difficult thing, especially if you can trace back the owners. I don't know that you're complicit in theft, but maybe you are by not, if you buy the land and don't give it back to its original owner.
If you don't look into the land and make sure that it's unowned, then yeah, absolutely. Because you're talking about the government here. It's like buying from a gang. You don't buy a TV from a gang and say, well, I assume they bought this wholesale. You buy a TV from a gang and assume that they broke into somebody's house for it.
Right. Right. Yeah, depending upon what you're buying. I was going to bring back a conversation from probably a year ago, so I'm not going to do that. That was a long time ago, me, you, and Andre. I feel like we've covered that. I wonder how often it happens that someone buys land that the state owned where they can trace back the original owner.
Well, it depends on which state. Because for instance, all these major sports organizations, which, by the way, fuck the Super Bowl, but beyond that, all these major sports organizations, most of them have built a stadium using government stolen property.
Yes.
And government stolen money to fund it, the building of the stadium. And they do this in very fucking poor neighborhoods, so it gentrifies it and makes sure that the poor underclass in the place that they are, that would have revolted against corrupt regimes, now can't do that. All these sports organizations are basically colluders with the state. Most of these sports organizations that are colluders with the state, they are stealing land, they are stealing property, and then they're using it to fund their sports stadiums. And that sort of thing happens regularly, where a neighborhood is raised to build like a skyscraper or something, or to expand the limits of a city limit, you know? And so things like this do happen, but they mostly happen by corporations stealing the land directly using the power of government, or government saying, hey, we just took this land, we seized it, and we'll give it to you real cheap. and then the corporation moving on to it, knowing that that's what happened. So usually it's not the little guy. It's not the Cliven Bundy that moves his cattle onto a piece of land and grazes them there. It's not the you know, Jeremiah Mitchell or Harding who go on to the range and, you know, try to homestead that shit. You know, it's these big ass corporations that have very specific profit interest in getting cheap ass land that was stolen from others. And so those people are the people that would be most ethically dubious, in my view.
Yeah. And that's process is even, it's a little bit different than what we were talking about before too. Cause in those cases, usually the corporation isn't buying it from the state, but they're buying it from the people who own the property. And by buying, I mean saying you absolutely have to move off this property for this amount of money and we're going to destroy this building and put up a stadium. Yeah, they're not buying it from the state, but they are using the state even to me, like more direct, in a more directly evil way to steal people's land and give them something in return and call that a just transaction, despite it being potentially involuntary. I'm sure a lot
but
of people
saved
sell their
your economy. You should be happy.
Yeah. They always paint that as a big economic boom for an area, which is utter bullshit. Just do a few article searches on Mises.org, and you will discover that
because I mean, if the people at the time don't have the fucking like resources to buy the things involved in that booming economy, then the economy will stagnate after the fucking sports game ends, and people will just have this big ass sore on their community, and they'll hate it. So I mean, it's nothing. It's not a boom if it has to be forced, unless it arises from natural markets that grow from the business cycle. It's not going to be a boom. It's going to be a boom followed by a bust, by several more booms.
It's a boom for some people. Is what it is. Some people gain at the expense of others. And that's not just at the expense of people that are taxed. Because when you build a stadium, a bunch of new businesses and restaurants and hotels and stuff pop up around it. So it actually redirects money that was going elsewhere in the economy toward the region of the stadium. So if I owned a restaurant that was, you know, 2 miles away, and then from the new stadium they were about to build, then they built a new stadium and other restaurants opened down there, more than likely I will lose business to that region. That's not, you know, an ethical issue. It kind of sucks for the business owner if this happens in a free market context. But when it is put there, you know, using force and using taxpayer dollars, it's using taxpayer dollars to have, you know, one business owner lose customers, essentially.
And to have, like, the police force people out of their homes so that they can be razed to the ground. I saw fucking, and especially fuck FIFA. That entire organization is very responsible for extreme poverty and, like, taking people in extreme poverty already, using police force to force them out of their homes. I've seen videos of it where people are being shot dead in the fucking streets because this organization wants their stadium. Fuck FIFA.
Yeah, I don't, that's pretty crazy. What, I don't know what else. Oh, just on one more thing on the stadium thing that's pertinent to the original question. What I have noticed, and I don't know if this is universally true, but it seems like in the cities where they are putting up new stadiums, the poor tend to be the people who are most supportive of these new stadiums being put up. And that's just due to me living in big cities where a couple of these projects were going on and having conversations with people about it. So
in America,
it's completely
sure.
anecdotal. So it seems like they buy the lies. They buy that this is going to be, you know, really great for the local economy and really an amazing thing for their lives to have this, you know, new stadium for this sports team. And the poor are the ones who are, you know, least likely to go to a football game, or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's very expensive. Maybe they'll go to a baseball. That's not quite as much, but they largely, I'm guessing, these are middle class events. They're not events that, you know, your urban poor are attending most. So they're through their rent payments and through owning houses, they're subsidizing this stadium for a bunch of upper middle class people to go enjoy their team.
Yeah, because it's fucking parasites, yo. That's the whole thing. The U.S. government
They're parasites that have convinced a lot of people that they're not parasitical. They're actually just engaged in a symbiotic, mutually beneficial type of relationship.
Yeah, but like, okay, so the U.S. government wants people to believe that they're beneficial, right? So what better way than to have the Republican-Democrat thing play out like sports on television and then have people trained to accept that sports is basically the norm and that, like, sports teams are going to be beneficial to you, to your local economy, to blah, blah. And, you know, what better way to do that than to get a lot of people very jazzed about something that's being in their community, even though it was totally unnecessary and just made it slightly easier for corporations, not even easier for them. Like, the whole thing is just bread and circuses, and it gets people very trained to accept the way things are. Yeah, that's all it is.
I think there's this extremely strong desire for people to latch onto and praise any sort of state activity that is something other than evil. You know, if it's, if it's, you know, or at least obvious evil, you know, people don't want to, you know, they're not going to praise, you know, killing or I didn't read the article yet, but it was like Pentagon's hiding a video of U.S. troops raping boys in front of their mothers. Yeah. So I don't know if you read that. I'll look at it probably soon after this show. I read something about that
like a really long time ago.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they're not going to highlight that. But anything that they could say, yeah, see, this organization really is good. And it, psychologically, it makes sense because it sucks to admit that there's this giant group of people who are violating your basic human dignity and there's not much you can do about it.
Especially like, people have been pledging allegiance to them since they were kids.
Yeah. There's all sorts of problems.
It's like that old question, you know, why are mommy and daddy hitting each other? Why are the U.S. and Iraq still at war in some ways, you know? Like, it's fucking... And then, of course, these sports games, the USO is there. So support the troops while you're watching your favorite troops.
Right. Supporting the troops. Yeah, that's the worst part about sports.
Fucking America. Fuck yeah.
America. Yeah, I haven't pissed off people regarding the flag in a while. Feel like it's getting to be about that time. Maybe I'll just start burning them in the streets. No, because I don't want to purchase them. Okay, it's 5 o'clock. We gotta go.
See, all you gotta do to be like, see, and this is my chance to plug, because all you gotta do to piss people off about the flag is be like, first off, yes, Sam Warner, it's definitely Stockholm syndrome. Second off, all you gotta do to piss off people regarding the flag, regarding America, is say that you're watching Jeremiah Talks on YouTube, which is going to be a Monday to Friday vlog series that's starting this Monday.
Cool. So do you have any vlogs already pre-recorded that you're just going to upload? No. You don't. You're just going for it.
All right, yeah, cool, because man. I just built all my assets. I'm going to comment on what's trending. I'm going to comment on my like pissed off immediate views on things and then maybe come back with a cooler headed revised view of it later. Maybe it's going to be a really fucking like, I'm just going to go for it because I'm too careful. And it means that I've missed out on a lot of opportunities to talk about a lot of things where I was right. And so I need to just stop getting in my own way, and I need to fucking do it. And that's what I'm going to do.
All right. He's going to do it. He's going to Nike that shit. Yeah. Don't be too careful. Just fuck up all the time. That's what I do.
Exactly. I need to stumble my way forward. That's exactly what I need to do, because mistakes are the cobblestones on the road to success or some bullshit like that. Yeah. I need to really realize
that's a nice pleasant metaphor. Well, you can't make a mistake if you don't do anything, and if you do something, you're going to make mistakes.
Right.
The more you do, the more you accomplish, the more mistakes you'll make, but you'll have done and accomplished something. At least, you know, exactly. Even just so you can be like, yeah, I wanted to do that, and I did that shit. That's a reward in and of itself. You know, yeah, it's something plus, that powers course, you forward.
Plus, of course, there's so many ways to make money doing vlogs, and I plan to be an affiliate on many of them. So, Sam Warner also says, if you get a chance, check out YouTube vid, Gaslighting is Everywhere. Narcissists and sociopaths trap codependents and render them powerless. Okay, I will check that out.
All right, I copied it.
Although I have a feeling I know where it's going.
All right, you plugged your shit. All the links to your YouTube and the article you sent me and this Gaslighting is Everywhere video on YouTube, because I generally trust Sam Warner, will be on the episode page at timetofreed.us. And then I think if you just search episode 45 or CR 45, you should be able to find that pretty easily. I'm pretty sure this is episode 45.
Sam Warner, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You're a good dude.
Okay. Let's get out of here. You want to follow me on Twitter? It's at JeremiahJM. And we will be back next week. Yeah, unless I forget what day it is. That's going to be unlikely. All right. Thanks for joining us. Peace out, y'all.